It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till 3, Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till 3.
An Odyssey station.
Item 3 here on a Tuesday afternoon on Danny and Dusty, whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AMTheFan or Twitch.tv/1080AMTheFan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for joining us on this glorious Tuesday afternoon. And it is a Tuesday afternoon at 2-ish, which means it's time for 3 up, 3 down, 3 things we like, 3 things we didn't. Coming out of the NFL weekend that was...
Oh, yeah, brother.
We had ourselves a nice little NFL weekend. We had some good games. We had some stinkers. We had some miraculous happenings, as it were. What did you like coming out of the weekend?
Tight end plays back. A lot of people and, like, fantasy owners... This is why fantasy football just drives me crazy, is because people are like, Bob! The offenses are broken! First few weeks, it's like, relax. Defensive coordinators have come out. Offenses will adjust. They're taking away the deep ball. Offenses will adjust. Scoring has gone back up. Fantasy football owners freaking out that George Kittle and Travis Kelce and Kyle Pitts. Oh, they're bums. They're not producing. Tight ends are like diesel engines. You got to warm up, and as the season goes on, they become more and more valuable, and they score more and more points for you. And then all of a sudden, they're going to score all these points. They're going to win you a fantasy football championship, and you're going to forget at the beginning of next year how much you hated them because they started slow. Right now, this weekend, you saw George Kittle go for over a hundo. McBride in Arizona, he went over a hundo. Travis Kelce, Kyle Pitts, both had wildly productive games. I think they're around like 90 yards. Pitts had 2 touchdowns. Tight ends are back, and it was National Tight End Day that we need to stop making that such a big deal. But tight ends were back this weekend in a big way.
And they need to go to the Players Union and all collectively walk out.
You get more money, damn it.
My first up, Steelers finding a rhythm offensively.
All right.
They've been good, and they might actually surpass the typical, it's the Steelers. They're going to be a 9-8, 10-7. It could be good, but I'll give credit where credit's due. When they had Justin Fields under center, they were winning games, but it was very much the, this isn't going to last.
Well, I watched last night, and I don't think it'll last either.
I don't think so, but you do have to give them credit where they're getting explosives. They're getting big plays, things that you didn't get with Justin Fields. You're getting passes completed over the middle of the field with consistency. Not great. Not look, you know me. I'm not the biggest fan of Russ.
Yeah.
But they're doing more than enough.
Yeah.
To win games.
Yeah.
And more than enough when you've got a defense that can be as disruptive as them and they're functionally sound.
I point you to the first 3 quarters.
Yeah.
Field goal, field goal, field goal.
Mike Tomlin loves field goals.
73-yard punt return.
When you're as good.
That's all they scored.
when you're as good as they are in every other phase, you need to just be acceptable.
I would kill myself if I'm a Giants fan right now.
Yeah, I mean, a very winnable game.
All right.
What do you got?
Yeah, but you know what? You're right. Nobody believes they're going to win a Super Bowl, but they're better.
Yeah, better.
I'm going with the AFC West here. The AFC West looked like it was an absolute disaster at the beginning of the year. The Raiders, Chargers, Broncos all look doo-doo. The Denver Broncos ended up finding their identity on the defensive side of the ball. Their offense is still very far away from being explosive, but Bo Nix is looking more comfortable. Has played really well in the month of October, for goodness sakes. They won five of their last six games. They are going to hit a rough patch because their schedule really ramps up. The Chargers, no weapons offensively. They've been trying to figure this thing out and patchwork all the way through. Their offense has looked anemic with Greg Roman. They've won two of their last three games, and now you're sitting there and going, Jim Harbaugh coach team warming up as the season goes on. And then there's the Kansas City Chiefs, which if they wanted to, they probably could go 17-0 in the regular season.
Gross.
I mean, they might not want to just because
rest
guys, but they have a winnable schedule all the way through. They've figured a lot of things out. They go and they acquire DeAndre Hopkins as a wide receiver that Patrick Mahomes can lean on and rely on. They are winning on the defense side of the ball, and they're damn near perfect. The AFC West started out looking like a dumpster fire. They're figuring this thing out as they go, and I'll be damned if that division isn't just okay now. They're an okay division.
They're not that bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what happens.
Including, even do it.
They were competitive against the Chiefs. For whatever reason, they always are. It doesn't matter. It's so dumb. It makes no sense.
And there's points scored.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, it's 10 out of the last 11. That's 46.5 points or more. I don't know why.
Yep.
My second up, the legend of Jaden Daniels.
Ooh.
It's growing. Look, you don't get the Hail Marys all that often. Remember, Aaron Rodgers has got four, which is two more than everyone else. Jaden Daniels has already got one in his rookie year, and he's making play after play after play. The Offensive Rookie of the Year is his award to lose at this point.
It helps when you've got a defender not paying attention when the play
starts.
Super
useful, but Jaden Daniels is having perhaps an even more special year than C.J. Stroud last year coming out. And we thought Stroud would be good, but not great, which is why he fell a little bit in the draft. But what Jaden Daniels is doing, his completion rate, His proliferate ability to make big plays is just something we've never seen before in a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go with my third and final up. The Pack is back.
Mm.
They're winners of four in a row. Again, very similar to the Denver Broncos. They've won five of their last six games. They look to be hitting a rhythm, but
Jordan Love does have the groin after having the MCL.
Don't think you want him to play this weekend. Mm-hmm. They got the Lions coming up, but I think it needs to be acknowledged. This is a team that it's not perfect on the defense side of the ball, but it's, again, another draft where they have knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Evan Williams, your fourth-round pick, is playing really well. The back end of your secondary looks really damn good. You have just it plugged in at every single position.
That's what they do.
New faces through the draft, developing talent, and you're seeing them reap the rewards of it right now. And oh, by the way, look at Mike McCarthy, look at Aaron Rodgers, no longer in Green Bay. They weren't a product of the system. They made that system and enhanced it.
Mm-hmm.
But without it, they look like completely different entities that they were.
My third up, I was going to go with the Lions because they are just an absolute wagon. But I'm going to give some love here to the Eagles because I have been down on them most of this season. Them Eagles finding a way to beat the living crap out of the Bengals by just pounding the ball down their throat. And if Jalen Hurts is going to complete 16 of 20 passes, be a play-action monster, A.J. Brown's going to be healthy, and they're just going to break your will, then they become the team that we kind of thought they were, regardless of how Kellen Moore is calling things, whether Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts want to kill each other, whether you're trying to find or fill that leadership void left by Jason Kelce. The overwhelming talent is starting to come through as they start to put things together, and they ended the Bengals season, and they might have springboarded their own.
My first down.
You play to win the game.
I don't think they are in New York right now. The Jets, man. The Jets are in hell. Aaron Rodgers had this after their game.
Yeah, I've been in the darkness. You got to go in there. Make peace with it. Offensively, our goal has just got to be score 30. Doesn't matter what the other two sides are doing. You know, we have trust in our defense and teams. But if we're not scoring 30, we're underachieving. This offense can do that every single week.
If you are saying you need to score 30 points, you do not trust your defense or your special teams.
You're the Baltimore Ravens.
You are saying we cannot trust our defense. So Jets are not in the darkness. They've gone event horizon. They've poked through the darkness, and they've gone to hell.
Yeah.
They poked right through it. Not good.
Terrifying movie the first time you ever see it.
Yep.
Truly.
Especially when you're 12.
Right. My first down, Seattle Seahawks, after starting the season off 3-0, they have basically face-planted the rest of the season. Now, granted, losing to the Lions, it's acceptable, especially on the road. Losing to the Giants, not okay. Losing to a broken 49ers team at home, not okay. Again, you get a win against the Falcons, who are kind of meh. And the Bills were one of the best teams in the NFL. But you're in a division that is dog water and is wide open. You've had three opportunities to win games that you should have won. And instead of running away with this division, you're now in the muck with everyone else.
And by the way, due to tiebreakers, the Arizona Cardinals currently are the top team in the NFC West.
So dumb.
All right, my second down is the Ravens defense, not just because, as you said, offense needs to score 30 for you to win. No. It's much worse than that, because everybody was rightfully so applauding Jameis Winston for how he played on Sunday. And Jameis Winston did play really well. But did you see the dropped interception? Do you see it just like defender hand, no worky?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out the Baltimore Ravens lead the NFL in dropped interceptions this year.
Mm.
Dropped interceptions. There have been four times the ball has hit a defensive back's hand and he has just dropped it outright.
And
I can think of one against the Kansas City Chiefs at the beginning of the season,
Hamilton.
Too. I mean, it is brutal right now. If you are a struggling defense, turnovers can swing momentum and get everything right with you guys. If you're going to give up yards, at least get the ball back for your team. And that is one of the things where the Ravens defense is truly struggling the most. Four dropped interceptions leading the NFL. Yeah.
My second down, the Bears road woes. Bears, when they come out of the cave, they don't do well in the friendly confines of Soldier Stadium. They've scored 119 points in four games. That's 15 touchdowns. The team is averaging just a crack under 30 points, 29.8. There's your 30 points right there. Aaron Rodgers is just talking about it. On the road in three games, they have managed 5 touchdowns. They have scored 44 points or 14.7 on the road.
That seems bad.
They cannot get it together away from home, and they better get it together. Otherwise, this division's going to... Look, they're probably going to finish the back of this division, but things have been weirder.
Yep.
You're still a good team, but you gotta figure this out. And I'm going to add this to my second down. I probably shouldn't just made this my number one down. Did you see the reporting that the Bears had the chance to bring in Ben Johnson, and they instead opted to keep Eberflus and Shane Waldron?
Okay, now, yeah, well, that's a yes and a no. Like, Ben Johnson wanted the Bears to have a vacancy, but it wasn't like he knocked on their door and was like, hey, if you fire Matt Eberflus, I'll be your coach. The report was that Ben Johnson, as teams were courting him, he was keeping an eye on Chicago, hoping they were going to part ways with Eberflus, and they never did.
And I mean, I think we can all kind of draw the lines there of, They got Ramadunze. They got Caleb Williams.
Well, that wasn't at that time. But
well, I mean, they knew what was.
They didn't know they were going to get a Dunze.
Okay, but I mean, you were going to get one of those receivers.
Yeah, you were going to get likely receiver, but you were going to get Caleb Williams. Yeah. That's what was appealing to him.
Yeah.
All right, my final down is: has anybody looked at the AFC standings? Anybody looked at this?
Yeah, it's a lot of suck at the bottom.
Well, there's going to be a lot of suck in the playoffs. As of right now, the Cincinnati Bengals are 3-5.
Mm-hmm. The great suck off.
They are nowhere near out of this playoff race by any stretch.
If you guys are going to suck, suck hard.
You know who else is not out of this playoff race? The Miami Dolphins.
At 2-5.
At 2-5. They are 2-5. And they are only...
They have a minus 60 point differential.
It's two games out. They could do it. They could do it with Tua.
Oh, God.
AFC, not good.
Well, I'm going to go to the NFC side of things now. Did the Cowboys hit rock bottom?
No.
What does rock bottom look like for this organization?
I don't know.
I don't think they've ever found it.
Yeah, Jerry Jones, don't threaten him to go deeper.
They're still scraping.
I mean, they can do it.
They are now 3-4.
Yeah.
They are the 13th seed in the NFC currently. They are 0-3 at home, and they have a minus 48.
Mind you, hold on. You say that again. At 3-4, they're the what seed?
13th.
At 3-4, they are the 13th seed. That would put them at 9th in the AFC, baby.
Look, the top of the AFC, a lot better, but the suck, there's a pretty clear line. But this Cowboys team, it's a dumpster fire.
It is.
This is the...
The offense isn't good. They're not playing for Mike McCarthy. No. They look like they're quitting on their coach.
And there's no coaching change that does anything for this team. Their issues are their issues. And the Eagles are getting right, and it's easier to believe in them. But the Commanders feel like they're about to run away with this division now because the Giants are so far gone, it's their toast. The Cowboys are right there. I mean, you're full-on cliffhanger. He's getting ready to drop her. You know, it's over. It's a two horse race in this division right now, and if you're a Cowboys fan, if you are the Cowboys, like how do you look at what you have right now and going forward and find hope?
About 30 years of doing the same thing. I mean, it really has. But it's been 30 years for him. I mean, doing the same thing.
This is the worst version of it, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you got a $231 million anchor.
Yeah. I mean, there's no path out of this.
No. None.
Ugh. All right, there it is. Three up, three down, three things we like, three things we didn't. Coming out of the NFL weekend that was. Coming up next, there's been a shift in the Heisman voting odds. Who's number one? Danny Dusty, Danny the Fan. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Heisman gambling. It comes and goes. Front runners galore. There's been a pretty seismic shift, though. There's no Travis Hunter. There's no Cam Ward. There is no Ashton Jeanty at the front.
It's the guy who started at the front.
Dylan Gabriel, your odds-on favorite, according to sports books, to win the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised at this, but when you kind of think about it and you go down the list, all right, who usually wins the Heisman Trophy?
The best quarterback, or the quarterback on the best team.
Who vaulted to the top of the Heisman rankings after Georgia lost their first game of the year?
Was it?
Jalen Milroe.
Milroe, yeah.
Jalen Milroe went, whoop, Alabama beat Georgia. He jumped up to number one. The trophy usually goes to the best quarterback on the best team, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. And right now, Oregon is ranked number one. Dylan Gabriel is playing very efficiently, despite what some Oregon fans will tell you and panic about his interceptions. He's playing really damn good football right now. But I've long said, I think Travis Hunter is the guy who should win the Heisman Trophy right now. Like, what he's doing is absolutely insane. I've been saying this all season long. The ability to play both ways at the level that he is, mm-hmm. is the epitome of what the Heisman Trophy should go to.
The best player in college football.
Ashton Gentry, and what he is doing, despite having a subpar game for him.
Yeah, 133 yards for him.
Just because he didn't hit the over-under in Vegas with 190 against UNLV, and they just sold out against the run the entire game. UNLV did a really good job.
Well, if you take out his first 12 carries, he had like 30 yards. After that, he basically just
found his rhythm.
He wore him down.
I think it should be Gentry.
I do too.
But those two guys are playing just out of this world. But also, you have to take this into consideration. Right now, Dylan Gabriel is pacing to break one of the more unbreakable records in football. He is on pace
to break the all-time
break match. Case Keenum's record of 19,217 yards passing.
But is the Heisman Trophy a career trophy, or is it the best player in college football?
No, it's not. But you know that if there's an unbreakable record, and Dylan Gabriel, he's going to have to throw for, what, 4,000, over 4,300 yards this season or whatever to break it. And he won't break it at the time the Heisman Trophy is doled out either.
No.
Because college football postseason stats do go towards the career numbers. So right now, Dylan Gabriel on his current pace would need 2.5 non-regular season games. So Big Ten championship game and then 2 playoff games is what he would have to do to break Case Keenum's record at his current clip right now.
It's like 290 yards a game, right?
He's at 296, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's at 296 a game is what his current clip is. At the end of the regular season, he'll be 795 yards short of that quote-unquote unbreakable record, and on the number one ranked team, and potentially being, I think he'll be top five in passing yards this season. He's going to have a boatload of touchdowns, and that's unfortunately how most of these people vote for this award now. It's not going to the best player in all of college football, because I think the real conversation is between Travis Hunter and Ashton Gentry. I mean, it is. That's where that conversation is right now.
Well, the thing is, does Travis Hunter have a Shedeur Sanders problem?
No, Shedeur Sanders will not take any of his votes.
Because Deion Sanders is even coming out and saying he's not even mentioned for the Heisman. Oh, my bad. He's my son. That's why.
Okay. I think people are just rolling their eyes at Deion at this point. No voter in their right mind
just at this point
should have Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter under consideration on the same ballot.
No.
Travis Hunter is far superior than Shedeur Sanders is right now. That's it. Take Travis Hunter off of that team, and is Shedeur Sanders putting up the numbers he is? No, he isn't. Travis Hunter is absolutely incredible this year, and he's doing it on both sides of the football. He's top five on two positions. Yeah. It's nuts.
When you're taking a look at the NFL draft, he's wide receiver 3 at worst.
At worst.
Corner, he's CB2.
And this is a guy that when he gets to the NFL, he's going to pick a side.
Yeah, and he's going to specialize in that.
And he'll
be terrifying.
He'll catch all the guys that are in front of him right now at each of those positions, because he's going to be focusing on one side of the football. But Dylan Gabriel right now, plus 230 to win the Heisman Trophy. Travis Hunter, plus 270. Cam Ward, plus 300. Ashton Gentry, plus 440. And then the next closest is Cade Klubnik, the Clemson quarterback, plus 1,500.
He had that stinker, obviously, to open the season against Georgia.
Plus 1,500.
If you're talking value, that's value.
I think the guy who is Rourke.
Indiana.
Curtis Rourke at Indiana, the Indiana quarterback. If he misses one game, they go undefeated, and they're in a Big Ten championship game at the end. It puts up ridiculous numbers.
Again, this isn't.
And if he beats Oregon. Ohio State,
let's say Indiana runs the table and gets the Big Ten title game, and let's say Indiana does the unthinkable and wins that game.
What about it?
I mean, at that point in time, like, does he almost have to default to that, to being the Heisman winner?
No, because the votes are already in.
Is it Big Ten?
They vote.
Is it the week before?
They vote.
After the regular season?
Yeah, they vote.
At the end of the regular season?
Yeah, I think votes have to be in, and then they do the announcement the following weekend.
No, that's what it is. Okay, yeah.
Now, so see, time-wise. Like, I sit here and I do I produce our Ducks pregame show and all that stuff, and I'm a little bit of a duck honk, even though I didn't go there like most Oregon fans. But I feel like I don't think Dylan Gabriel should be the front runner either.
No,
I feel like it should be Jenty, and maybe some of that is that I consume more Oregon football than I do anything else, so I see more of his flubs and flaws than I do anybody else, but I don't think he should be at the top. And I'm not taking anything away from his season. He's having a tremendous season, and clearly the Ducks are too. They're the number one team in the country.
Voting window ends on the Monday after conference championship weekend.
Okay, I thought it was right there that same week. So, again, we're talking about a long ways off and a million things can go. But if Rourke ends up leading, like he misses just that one game, and he comes back, and he continues to put up numbers, and that Indiana team is just an absolute wagon, and they – whoever they match up with in the Big Ten title game, they win that game.
Yeah.
I think he has to be one of the top three.
Yeah.
Unquestionably.
I think he's like plus this 6,000, Curtis Rourke is.
Because he has been putting up numbers. And here's
that's
the thing,
a long shot.
The Dylan Gabriel stuff, he's been really good. He doesn't strike me as Heisman good, where you're like, that's the best player in the country.
Yeah,
Travis Hunter.
It sounds like the best player on the best team,
yes,
the quarterback on the best team.
Let's say,
it doesn't take anything away from him or Oregon season.
Let's say Garson Beck was not awful at multiple times through the season, and Georgia runs away with the season, and they're undefeated, and you give him the Heisman. It's like, it would feel weird. Because it's just like, he hasn't been the best player in the country. And honestly, if you're going quarterbacks, I think the two quarterbacks that probably should get the most love for the Heisman are Rourke and Cam Ward. You take Cam Ward off that Miami team and, oh boy.
Yep.
Real quick.
Yep. I mean, I think that we look at it, though, and we go, was Bryce Young the best player in college football
in
2021?
No, and again, I think they got it wrong.
Yeah.
He was the quarterback on the best team.
No. And I would very much like to see them get away from that.
Yeah.
I want to see Ndamukong Suh win. I want to see Charles Woodson win.
Yep.
I want to see the best player in college football win.
I
want
to see Toby Gerhart win.
Yeah. Yes. Like, you want to see, like, you look at that and you go, I don't care what the NFL projection is. I don't care what that, like, who right now is the best player in college football?
Yeah.
And I think the award needs to go back to that.
And I think it's Ashton Jenty.
Yeah, I think you have a very clear argument that it's the two guys are Jenty and Hunter. We'll see where it ends up and kind of how things shake out. And I think a big part of that is going to play out in that Big Ten title game. And is did you read Vanini's article on the tiebreakers?
Yeah, I did. But I have a question for you.
Mm.
Does Oregon beat Ohio State without Dylan Gabriel?
Well, no. But who does? No,
you're right. Yeah.
If they don't, no, if they don't,
you're not
get,
wrong.
If they nope. don't get Dylan Gabriel, do they get somebody else in the portal? And does that quarterback do it?
It would have been Cam Ward.
So you know, you get what I'm saying? Like,
I know, but a guy who you're saying is, you know, like
another Heisman or another top Heisman candidate,
or it would have been Dante Moore. Like, Dante Moore is the other quarterback that they got out of the portal.
And he's not winning that game.
Well, and Dylan Gabriel's really damn good.
No. Again, well, look, he's, you know, like, 100% he is.
Dante Moore might not win that game, but they might win it in a different way.
I don't know. Look, I think he's a high-profile prospect who can figure some stuff out, and he's definitely got tools, but,
I mean,
Dylan Gabriel's got 5 years of experience under his belt.
He went 23 of 34 for 341 yards and had one of that throw to Evan Stewart, it was pinpoint. And that's the thing, too. Heisman moments mean something.
Yep, it does. They absolutely do.
Is and that good?
A Heisman moment is Dylan Gabriel against Ohio State, right?
Mm-hmm. And like, and that's
a very valid point.
Those are the things that the voters look for, too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. The unfortunate thing for Oregon is they don't really have too many challenges between now and the Big Ten title game. I mean, Michigan notwithstanding.
Well, Wisconsin will be a feisty one.
Is that going to give him the chances for the Heisman moments?
No.
And that's the thing. You're hoping that if he's going to do it, it's because he gets the Big Ten title game again with the Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Or not again, but gets the Big Ten title game and has another, either they beat the brakes off somebody and he shows out, or he does what he did against Ohio State and does it in the big moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an interesting spot, which is, we'll keep it in college football because I want to talk about the tiebreakers and kind of how things are setting up across the country in multiple conferences and how that might be disruptive immediately to the new 12-team college football playoff. But first, here's a big Kahuna Sports Center update.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
In the economy, you see shrinkflation. The adjustment is the dollar doesn't do well, and those Doritos bags get smaller and smaller.
Hey, I heard that they're putting more chips in.
They're putting more chips back in because their sales are down. The flip side of that is sometimes you get overinflation when the dollar becomes the almighty difference maker. And I think you're seeing that across college football, where bloated conferences are causing conferences to not have all teams all play each other. And so you're losing direct head-to-head tiebreakers. And all across college football right now, Big Ten, SEC, and Big 12, ACC, your Power Four all have very serious questions about tiebreakers for conference title games heading into this weekend.
No doubt about it.
There's a game that you and I are going to that may end up having a conference title game before a matchup because of tiebreakers that are going to screw things over. There is so much going on in college football, and these conferences are so big that I don't think anybody considered, like, what happens if four or five teams at the very top are actually good? And that's really what you have right now is, as much as we talk about the diversification of college football, where the second tier guys on every roster are basically kind of matriculating out, it's raised all tides. And with that, you have teams that last year you had a Mountain West that was decided by essentially a BCS system. You had Boise State taking on UNLV because you had four teams that were 6-2 in conference at the end of the season that had not played each other.
Yeah. And look, there's a lot of metrics that are going to go into it because of the fact that, like, the Big Ten, for example, Indiana, Penn State, Oregon do not play each other. That's a big problem if all of them end up being unbeaten, because all of them will have wins over Ohio State at that point. Another conundrum.
Hilarious.
And you kind of go down the list of how these tiebreakers will work out. Like, fourth or fifth down is like, it's basically this metric of, there's a company that goes through and they will pump it through a formula.
It's
each
a BCS
team. Yeah, kind of, yeah. But it's like,
it's different.
It is a little bit different, and they'll just say who the two best teams are, and it's like, deal with it. And then, but here's the problem that the playoff committee will have. What do you do with the team that is undefeated, doesn't get a chance to play in their conference title game? Do you put
Penn State in over Indiana if Indiana's an absolute wagon?
Then Oregon plays Indiana in the conference title game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mops the floor with them, beats them by 40, right?
What do you do with Penn State now?
Well, where in the seeding does Penn State go? They get in.
Yeah.
But if you're in that situation, all right, are you going to put a Penn State team that didn't play in a conference title game in over a SEC runner-up? Penn State's undefeated.
A Tennessee, a Georgia.
A one loss team or two loss
Texas
team from the SEC. All right, well, let's just go the SEC, for example, mm-hmm. right? They have no unbeatens left.
No.
Their champ,
which actually kind of makes this harder.
there's a very real possibility that you look at it and you go, an SEC champ could have two losses, mm-hmm. and you could have an unbeaten from the Big Ten, an unbeaten from the Big 12, mm-hmm. an unbeaten from
ACC.
The ACC, and I don't know.
None would get a top four seed.
Say you have a one-loss Boise State, and that one loss that Boise State had was on the road by 3 points to the number one overall seed, and that's their only loss. Do you have a two-loss SEC champion?
Are you going to put Boise State as a 12 seed then?
Well,
like, I mean,
well, no, they could be the four seed.
But that's what I'm saying. Like that's the world that you exist that yeah. exists in is like either Boise State's a top four seed or there are 12.
You want to?
Like, and you're like,
if you want to see the SEC meltdown, they get two teams in. They get two teams in because that could be that could happen.
We're careening down that path right now.
If the doomsday scenario, which I think again, it's still really early in this, mm-hmm. right?
The next 4 weeks it's put up or shut up time.
But if there is this situation where you have currently in the ACC, Miami and Pitt have yet to lose a game, but there's also four teams that are unbeaten in the ACC right now. Now, some of them will play, but I believe it is Clemson. Is it Clemson does not play Miami, SMU, or SMU, right? Miami does not play this season Pitt, Clemson, or SMU. So they.
How did SMU avoid both?
I don't know. New guys. Nobody thought they'd win. SMU only has Pitt. They avoid Clemson and Miami. So you could have a situation where there's like three, four, one-loss ACC teams or three unbeaten ACC teams.
Those committees that were deciding and working within the BCS system are just probably pointing and laughing right now.
Yeah. Dude, it's great.
It's just tremendous.
I'm an agent of chaos. I would love to see this whole thing go chalk. The ACC, Big 12, and Big 10 just throw a mat. And oh, by the way, Notre Dame wins out and they have one loss. And their one loss is to Northern Illinois. What are their one losses to Northern Illinois? They're 11-1. That knocks another team down a peg.
Mm-hmm.
You have an unbeaten team from the Big 12 or Big 10 that is like, hey, we haven't lost a game. We deserve to get three teams in. The ACC goes, hey, we have a one-loss team. We have two one-loss teams and an unbeaten. We deserve to have three teams in.
And nobody's happy.
And the SEC's like, we deserve five.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be so violently dumb.
SEC will get three in, right, at least.
Coming up next, we'll put a nice little bow on today's show before we hand it off to Isaac Asuk here on Danny and Dusty to name the fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan, the inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers, brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
Those palaces in the desert, they're pretty damn good at what they do. Last night was a 12.5 point spread. The Kings win by 13. Some might call it a backdoor cover. Others may call it a bad beat, but that's what happens. Your Trailblazers will take on the Los Angeles Clippers for the first time in the Toilet Bowl, the Intuit Dome, tomorrow night, 7:30. And we'll see if the Blazers can win their first road game of the season. This Trailblazers report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15th and Broadway or at AztecWillies.com.
I like big butts, I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. When around things in your face, you get sprung.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080, The Fan.
Pull up tough. Is this Richard Cheese?
No, it's some like random dude. He's got like a Facebook account or something. There I Ruined It is the account, I believe.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen this before. Yeah, I haven't heard this version, though. I'm not going to lie, taking I Like Big Butts and I Cannot Lie and putting it to Hallelujah
So
I will say hallelujah. I do love big butts and I cannot lie.
I mean, come on, man. It's tremendous.
It's really good.
It's really good. Anaconda don't want none unless you've got them buns, hun. When it's round and thick, I wanna stick it to you. Oh my God.
Okay, this verse is better. The first verse was good. And I'm
strong and oh, here we go. To get the friction on when I see a thick soul sister, hallelujah. I've seen that bubble.
Now I'm in trouble. Hey.
Hey. Baby got back.
God
I'm gonna bust that out at Christmas.
Oh, sweet fancy Moses.
I'm gonna work that into a playlist.
And now we're late.
Throw it out there.
That is the thing of beauty.
Now we're late, but it was worth it.
Worth it.
Hashtag worth it. All right, we'll see you on a Wednesday. I'll be in Eugene, and you guys will be back here. It's Eugene edition of Danny and Dusty. And
story time?
Yeah, story time with Uncle Jerry has... We discussed it last week. I need to just make sure that Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks, is down. But we may have story time with Uncle Jerry tomorrow.
Love it.
All right. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Bye.
Kiefer Sutherland is not my hall pass. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.